How I got here isn't enough to keep me here, right?
The voice you just heard is Dr. Doug Lindsay. Doug served for more than 22 years in the Air Force, where he held a variety of roles. And since leaving the military, he's worked as a leadership consultant and coach. He is currently the executive editor for the Center for Character and Leadership Development at the United States Air Force Academy. Join my conversation with Doug, where we talk about all different kinds of topics related to leading in challenging times. We've had the chance to do some work together as well, so I appreciate you joining me today. And you know, one of the topics I'm really interested in is leadership, and leadership as it intersects communications. And it seems like obviously that is kind of more important than ever these days, right? Especially as we're going into an uncertain kind of economy and environment, which is kind of weird, right? Because we still have a low unemployment rate, yet everybody's talking about recession later this year or early into 2024. So it's a really interesting time. But I was curious, from your point of view on leadership development, I hear some people say, well, that's the individual's responsibility. And I hear other people say, no, that's the organization's responsibility. Where do you land on that?
That's a great question. And, you know, and I think to your point about being in interesting times, you know, I think we're also coming out of COVID, right? Although it's still there and it's always going to be around, it feels like we went to this period of normalcy for a while. We hit COVID, which caused us to rethink a lot of things as individuals and organizations about working remotely, where do we get our talent from, all that. We kind of come out of that, catch our breath just for a second. And then, like you said, we've got these economic things. We've got a lot of that going on. So I think your point is real important right now to figure out, you know, what is the organization's responsibility? What is the individual's responsibility? And I think to the point is, I think it's a little bit of both, right? I think the organizations have gone through a point where organizations used to have really large bureaucracies of training and development, and then, you know, where the organization provides a lot of that in terms of talent management. Then we kind of got away from that a little bit and put that at the individual's level of, you know, individuals need to prepare, they need to be ready. And now we're kind of in this balance, this dance of people have these competencies, so they're able to leverage it a little bit more with organizations. They can negotiate that, you know, in terms of where they're coming in and what organizations provide. But I think the reality is organizations that are successful understand that it's a little bit of both. It's about having systems in place to help develop the competencies and the abilities that they want, but also being really savvy about understanding who they're hiring in and the commodities that they're getting in terms of the people, and not just what they can do, but where they've been, the experiences that they bring in. So it's not so much just a skill management aspect of it. It's really about the background and what's bringing in. So I think the organizations that are successful understand that what we need to be doing, but what also we can expect from our individuals who are coming in there. And then I think from an individual standpoint, helps people, you know, advance in the organization when they're able to invest into themselves a little bit more. Kind of some of those old sayings they used to say, right? An investment in yourself, an investment in your education will always bear fruit, just because you're always learning, you're growing, you're figuring out how to do that. So kind of a long-winded way of saying, I think it's a little bit of both, and mm-hmm. we should expect people to be engaged in their own development. But I think as individuals, we should expect our organizations to provide some of that in areas that they feel are important, mm-hmm. right? So if we say that, you know, leader development is important, then what are organizations doing to provide job rotation, training and development, you know, those types of skill building opportunities to support the individual in that development? So a little bit of give and take.
Yeah, that makes sense, you know, and that's sometimes, you know, you brought up a couple things. One is sort of the experience of the individual, right? Mm-hmm. And their history and what they've gone through. And I think it seems to me like we're often kind of laser focused on that during the interviewing, but we almost lose sight of what was this person's background or experience when they're working with us, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, that kind of thing. So it's a good reminder to kind of keep in touch and really understand your people and what have they done, and then how might they help you in terms of problem solving or moving leadership forward in your org. So that's interesting.
I think that's a great point because, you know, again, with that job interview process, we're really focused on what the individual can do and how they can meet the need that we have right now for that position. And then, so we really kind of focus on that piece. But once they become part of the family, once they get part of that socialization process, right, it's kind of the leader's responsibility to step back and go, who do I have on my team? I know what they can do, but how might I use this talent in a broader way to help the organization? So not just about that skill, but what are those other things that we have? Because what we've seen now is, with this idea of remote work and remote employees, we have, as organizations, access to a talent pool well beyond anything that we've had in the past, right? If I'm hiring somebody in Colorado Springs, I need somebody to come to Colorado Springs, and they may not want to, right? There's for a host of reasons. There's where their families are, their kids might be in good schools, they might want to stay in a particular area. But now I have this broader access, this talent pool, that really is something I've never had to think about before. And then, you know, the leadership dynamics that go with it too. How do I onboard employees and teammates that are six states away or two time zones away, or, you know, maybe even overseas in a different country that I hadn't thought about before, and the leadership capacity that has to go into that and making people feel engaged, even though they've never personally met anybody on their team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point, Doug. And, you know, with this comfort of almost like working anywhere, right? I sometimes see like a give and take, at least publicly. So like, for example, you know, I see some orgs like Salesforce, right, that are going through a change right now. Obviously, they're, you know, cutting staff and other things, but they're also doing a hard look at their facilities around the world, as I understand it, and cutting space, right, because it's just not a reality that people are going to be in the office kind of every day. I also hear on the other side, like in some places in the finance community, like a Goldman Sachs, especially with the new employees, that they want everybody in the office, right, because of that mentorship and training and other kinds of things. So it's interesting that there's going to, you know, this continued maybe hybrid world we live in, right? But those folks, the thing I find challenging is for those folks who, like, if you have hired somebody overseas, right, you're not going to get a lot of FaceTime with that individual if you're based in Colorado Springs, right? Unless you have an exorbitant travel budget, which probably you don't. So let's drill into that for a second. You know, as a manager, as a leader, are there things that you counsel clients on in terms of how they can be successful in that remote, essentially like remote leadership, if you will, remote environment?
Right. You know, that's a great point. And, you know, there's a couple of things on that. I think that the biggest part about that and the biggest challenge we have with the remote environment is, again, it's not about talent. It's about engagement. And it's about bringing and understanding that organizational culture, right? So, for example, Cohen Veterans Network has an organizational culture that you've developed over the last 6 or 7 years that you've been in existence. And it's really easy to see that and understand that and really buy into that when you're living that every day and you see it every day, interacting with people every day. But when someone's remote and they may not see that every day and they may only see it in snippets of Zoom, it really comes down to that engagement. How do we help people feel engaged, connected, a part of the larger community instead of just, hey, I've got my work I've got to do. I sign on the computer on a certain day at a certain time. People are monitoring whether I'm online or not. And then I kind of check out at the end of the day. That's a real different feel for how do you make or help people feel engaged. And what we know about leadership and turnover within organizations is you know, a big reason why people leave is engagement, the lack of engagement. They don't feel connected beyond the work. It's kind of this sterile process that we do. I've got to do my piece, but it's really hard to understand how does that fit into the larger organization. So how do my goals fit into my leader's goals, fit into the organization's goals? So, you know, it's really that idea of how do we help people feel like they're part of a larger community? And a lot of organizations do it a lot of different ways. You know, the larger corporations, even like Walmart, bring in, you know, their store managers one or two times a year into a corporate setting to help them feel like they're part of a larger community. I know Cohen Ventures Network, you have your annual meeting where you bring everybody together for several days to go, let's connect, let's network, let's understand, let's meet people for the first time. You know, when you're onboarding people remotely, it's hard to sit there and go, hey, this is what's important. It goes back to, like I said, that idea of what Shine talks about with organizational culture. What are our values? What do we stand for? What are those artifacts that are important to who we are and what we do? So there's that idea of, you know, maybe we don't need as many office spaces because we have people working remotely. And I look at it this way is, so you've got a fixed cost with a footprint of your organization. So maybe you're getting rid of some of that and coming out of COVID, we haven't been used to traveling and all that, but you've got to make those connection points somewhere. So can we repurpose that money that maybe we had for infrastructure to travel? Because it's really important for that idea. It's interesting, we went through this about 20 years ago in the military where video teleconferencing was brought up as, hey, this is gonna be great. We can connect people, and this was, you know, back before, you know, Zoom and Teams and even Skype was on board. And the idea was, this is gonna be great, it's gonna save a ton of money because now all we have to do is just dial in and do that. And we went through this period of where travel budgets kind of went down. We did that. But what we realized was the connectedness piece, the humanity piece, the sitting down one-on-one, looking at someone in the eyes going, hey, this is really important to understand who I am as your leader, what's important to me, what my team needs from me. And those happen in conversations. They don't always happen on a 59-minute Zoom call that we've got to do where we're trying to get through so many things. Kind of around the water cooler, at the coffee pot, trying to have those connections, the office stop by. So what are you gonna do if we're not able to do that? We're not able to meet face-to-face, then what kind of infrastructure, architecture are you gonna put in place where we still get that same connectedness that we had before when everybody was in the office? And then also who you might need that with and who you don't. You know, do we, you know, are there some jobs that require the in-person, and some jobs that can be like, hey, we just almost like a contractor type mentality of, can we outsource this? Is this something that we can just have somebody else do? Mm-hmm. I hope that was kind of a long-winded answer there, but I hope that hits on the points that you were thinking of.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And, you know, in our org, you're right, we do get together as a whole team a few times a year, strategic planning, annual meeting, and then we have departmental meetings where we bring people together at least then another couple times a year. And then our leadership team, we try and be together at least once a month, and maybe even going to bring that up even further. Because I think you're right. I think that a situation like this, like you and I on Zoom, it's great. Great to see you. But I have a different relationship with you now because we spent some time together recently around the launch of our Colorado Springs Clinic. So we had dinner, you know, we had a bunch of time together. And it does make a difference, that FaceTime, right? And there's almost like the formal and informal rules of work, right? So your formal stuff you're getting in your job description, you might be getting in your training programs, but the informal is almost like those other do's and don'ts and/or how does this place work from a, you know, communications, political, whatever the lens is. So I think that's always something you can't disregard, right?
Correct. And I think that's a really good point because around, you know, Zoom and all that, again, can be great. I see somebody, you know, we can have that connectedness, but there's almost this artificial urgency that exists on Zoom when it's, we're on here, we've got another meeting, and we're kind of doing that. And so it creates this kind of shortness or this brevity, like you had mentioned, Whereas if we're in person, we can, you know, feel it's a little more authentic. It feels like we can engage a little bit more. There's not quite an urgency on the communication. So it's not so, what do I have to say versus all the other things around it, the norming, right? The socialization, the culture that comes about through those interactions as I see how people interact in a meeting and who's listening and who's not and all those other, right? We know that a large portion of communication is not just what's said, it's how it's said, it's the body language, it's all of that that goes into the presentation that you lose a little bit when you're just looking at a little camera on your computer.
Absolutely. All right, Doug, well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, leadership and individuals. So in other words, how do you know who you are as a leader, right? And how do you build on that? How can you be an authentic leader? And some other things. So we'll just take a quick break and we'll be right back with Doug Lindsay. Hey, if you're enjoying this episode or the series, we invite you to like, share, and or review the podcast. That would mean a lot. Thanks. And we're back. Thanks, Doug. So I wanted to talk about, you know, one of the things that you're focused on, and you do a lot of work with different clients, as well as obviously your history and work at the Air Force Academy. And I know leadership development is a huge part and focus of yours. So I was curious, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is sometimes there are people who are technically proficient in a job, right? So whatever the role is, whatever the industry. And so because they're very good at that individual role and responsibility, they then get the opportunity to up level, and then suddenly they're in charge of a department or a team, and they have direct reports for the first time and other things, right? And then if that goes well and the business is growing or they're meeting their goals, then they maybe get to a larger role, a regional role, other kinds of things. But what's been interesting to me to watch is there are those sort of hard skills and then the softer skills, right, that aren't always taught or developed. So I'm just curious, like, how do you approach that with your clients in terms of helping people understand their strengths, maybe where their areas for development are, and just really being honest about that and having people have that ability to self-reflect, self-awareness. I noticed that sometimes that isn't just a given, right?
No, that's a great point. And we could talk for days on that, because I think that's really the crux of it, right? It's that idea of, you know, it goes back to what kind of Hogan and Kaiser talked about 15 years ago now, is who you are is how you lead, right? That fundamental notion of, and it sounds super obvious, and a lot of times in leadership, what we're talking about is not, you know, really complex issues, but they are very, very difficult, right? They're straightforward, but they're not easy. These ideas of how I show up is going to impact how I'm going to lead, where I came from. So this idea of understanding who you are, we often, a lot of times we'll look at that from what we've done and what we've accomplished, and that gets very skill-based, versus understanding, and those are the hard skills, versus as we grow as leaders, as our network grows and as our influence grows, it really does put into that idea of those soft skills. And I think Goldsmith talked about that in a book years ago about, you know, what got you here won't get you there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that book.
Right? It's that idea of, you know, how I got here isn't enough to keep me here, right? And where I go, because when we look at people for promotion, we look a lot of times at performance and what they've done. We might roll some other in there, you know, are they a good teammate, and how we quantify that. But it's really about, you know, if I'm a good accountant or a good engineer, what makes me a good engineer is my technical proficiency, my ability to understand details, all of those things that really go into there. But then as I get promoted, what's going to help me lead others is a different skill set. It's a different a competency model of, you know, how do I build a network? How do I develop trust in others? How do I develop talent? How do I expose people to different opportunities and challenge them and do all of that? So it's really, I'm a big fan. I have an industrial organizational psychology background. So we're big on assessment. So what I oftentimes really focus in on is, you know, what does the information tell us? How do we know? You know, I always, you know, like to ask people, how are you doing as a leader? And then I ask them, how do you know? Where does that come from? Is it your own ideas? Is it your own thoughts? Right? Because as humans, we tend to, you know, be a little kinder to ourselves than we are to others. Right? And so when we look at things, how we do, we will, when we look at someone else's performance, we go, oh, well, they did this wrong or they didn't do this. They, you know, we attribute it more to their behavior. But when we look at our own selves, we tend to attribute the situation. And we go, oh, well, it was a tough situation. I didn't have everything I needed. So it's really that idea of helping a person wrestle with how do they know where they're at? And there's a lot of great assessments out there. I'm a big proponent of 360 degree feedback, which is that ability to get feedback from our superior, our peers, subordinates, others, and really get a sense for understanding how we show up. And what we're able to do with 360 feedback and other forms of assessment are, we are able to then sit there and go, well, here's how I say I'm showing up. Here's how other people are saying I'm showing up. Now let's look, are there disconnects? Now, if there's perfect alignment, then the beauty of that is, hey, I'm showing up exactly how I want to show up. Well, the follow-on question to that is, well, is that what the organization needs, right? Because I can be perfectly authentic and not be a nice person, right? I know, you know, if I'm a jerk and I know I'm showing up as a jerk and I'm okay with being a jerk, I'm authentic, but I may not be what my organization needs. So there's multiple layers there, helping the person understand that, one, they're responsible for their own development and they can change if they want to. Two, getting information about how they are actually showing up and saying, okay, are you showing up the way that you think you're doing? Because if I think I'm showing up in one level, but everybody else says I'm showing up at another level, well, that's a great discussion point. Why is there a disconnect? Are you maybe being, you know, a little kinder to yourself than you actually are? Or we see it sometimes others where people are, you know, hey, you're a fantastic leader, but the person has low self-esteem and they don't feel like they are. And so how do we robust some of those? So it's really that really sitting down, developing that one-on-one relationship. We do that a lot through coaching, as you know, is helping a person to see how they're showing up, how they want to show up, and then how do we build a plan to get there? Is it a skill-based issue? Is it a competence issue? It could be experiential, right? Maybe the person was put into a situation that was above their skill set. And so how do we help robust that, leaving them in place, or maybe we need to move them to another place, help them build that skill set. And then another part to all that is, as organizations, going back to the organizational side, is what does an organization really need for that individual? And do we have the proper promotion and hiring process to get that person ready to where they need to be? We see that sometimes in organizations with talent management, identifying people early on, giving them the skills they need so that when it comes time for that promotion, they're ready for it. Or sometimes we need to promote someone immediately, and then how do we help them get that information quickly on? So, but it really boils, it starts at that individual's perspective of helping them see where they're at, where they need to grow, and then scaffolding an opportunity for them to do that.
And did that answer your question? Yeah, no, that's great, Doug. And it sparks something for me is, you know, when you talk about, you know, is it a skill issue? Is it competence? Is it experiential? Things like that. It's interesting to me because I'm wondering, like, are there tips or techniques you can share about, you know, how you might coach somebody to want to engage in this sort of self-discovery, or tools to better understand themselves, you know, because I think there are instances where people are very open to that, and I think there are instances where people may not have the self-awareness to go, wait, I'm perfect, right? So I know the 360 can be a sort of an uncovering, like, hey, we noticed there's this disconnect here. But I guess are there any tools? I know sometimes we think of journaling, we think of other things, but are there tools that you found particularly effective to help somebody maybe become more self-aware and want to do that discovery work?
Yeah, that's there's a lot there to kind of unpack, right? So yeah, sometimes we utilize 360 to help kind of open a person's eyes on why that's how they're showing up, because they may or may not know, right? Because a lack of awareness issue is a different kind of a conversation than a I don't want to kind of person, right? I know how I am, I'm fine. I've been successful to this point and where that goes. So it kind of depends on where the individual is coming from in terms of, hey, I didn't know, and let's do that. And you can help coach somebody through that. Somebody had never thought about it before. You can, you know, coach through that as well. The individual who doesn't want to change is a tough conversation and one that we often don't tend to want to talk about, right? Because it has implications for the organization. A lot of this goes back to, you know, what I mentioned earlier about that organizational culture of the organization. Are we a learning organization? Are we an innovative organization? Are we an organization that is very explicit about what we're doing and what is important? Because in organizations that have a very strong learning culture, people who succeed and last in those organizations understand that that's part of the expectation. That is what it takes to be successful in this organization, is not a complacency, but a focus on how do I continue to get better? And there's an expectation, reward structures, there's promotions, things are all aligned within that. So it's easiest in an organization where, leadership has said, this is important. Leadership models that and says, this is what we do. They're engaged in professional learning. So that's a big part of it. But that idea of if someone is resistant to learning, there's a real important conversation for the leader to sit down with that individual and go, hey, if you're gonna move up in this organization or if you're gonna be successful, this is what we need. And helping that individual either understand that or maybe find a different opportunity, because mm-hmm. that sometimes, mm-hmm. right, we in the kind of just organizational literature, there's, you know, we talk about turnover, and not all turnover is bad. Some mm-hmm. turnover, when we lose talent, can be a challenge because we have to replace it. But there are things called functional turnover, when people find other opportunities because the fit just isn't there. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've outgrown their opportunity, they've outgrown their willingness to invest and not want to move up. And so we've got to think about where that individual is and where we need that people to be, or where we need that people to, you know, to perform within in the organization. So, and then to your point about those who do want to get better and they understand and they see that information, coaching helps. Reflection is huge, right? That's where journaling comes in and can be very important, but it's finding time to reflect. And that might be, people like to do that a lot of different ways. And really the best modality is the one that works for you. And that, you know, and it may be hey, I put on my calendar at the end of the week, 20 minutes to sit down and go, hey, let's think about what went right and what went wrong. We tend to over sample what didn't go right in our own behavior. But I think there's value also in understanding what went right and why. Why did that go right? Why did that work effectively? And to sit down and do a hot wash about why was that effective in that situation? Because we tend to just kind of go, okay, yeah, well, that went well, good. I got lucky on that one. No, probably not. There's a little bit more there that you could unpack on. Did you take more time to prepare, right? We know that with like leaders in communication. understanding your audience, taking the time to prepare, being very clear, being consistent in your messaging. Those are all things that are skills that are very important that we need to pay attention to on where we do that. And then again, you know, assessment. What kind of feedback am I getting? I always tell people, hey, you know, or ask people, what feedback are you getting? And they're like, okay, I get this. And then I ask them, what are you missing? What feedback are you not getting that you need or that you want for that development? And ask your boss, find a mentor, find a coworker that you can be accountable to, those types of things. So I think those little things there, spending time to reflect, getting the assessment you need, really figuring out where you want to go. That's a big part as well. Because sometimes people will get in an organization, they'll find their sweet spot, and they will just be successful there, and that's where they want to be, and let's let them be there, right? You know, we don't, in the military, the environment I come from, we're a very up and out type of organization. There's a progression that needs to go. It's great from an expectation management, it's great from a developmental standpoint, but sometimes people find that sweet spot, and that's where they want to be, and we sometimes we don't allow people to be there. But really having a good, open, honest thought process about where do I want to be? Where do I want to go in 3 to 5 years? Where and am I, and what skills do I need to add that are going to help me get to where I want to be? So hopefully there's a few nuggets in there in terms of what people can do who want to be motivated.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, the one other thing I was thinking is if you're an individual, you're in an organization and they don't have like a 360 process or they don't have some of these tools, there are so many of the self-analysis tools, the personality tests, other kinds of things that individuals can just take on their own, right, to better understand their strengths inventories and things like that. So that's, all, I think, also always a good step as well if you can't do the full 360s.
Right, and the great thing about some of those online assessments is you know, there are a lot of validated measures out there. A lot of those kind of come at a cost because it costs money to kind of validate and do all those. But there are some good free ones out there in terms of, you know, like on the Big Five, personality, and that. The key with those is to, when you take those, or if an individual wants to take those assessments, is, you know, asking the question of how does this help inform who I am? They're not designed to be diagnostic, to sit there and let someone take some personality measure and goes, wow, I'm introverted, that's bad. No, it's not. It's what does this tell me about who I am, how I'm showing up, and where are some areas I want to develop, right? So we'll see a lot of times leaders tend to be, or sometimes leaders are introverted. And can you be successful as a leader as an introvert? Absolutely you can, but you need to be aware of that. You need to understand how you're showing up and all of those things that go along with that. So that asking yourself that question, how does this help inform who I am as a leader based on what I already know about myself? Not so much about good, bad, yes, no, oh, I am this way. Well, what we know about behavior too is things like personality, even though it tends to be pretty stable, we can become a little bit more. I tend to be an extreme introvert by choice, but that doesn't mean that I can't be extroverted. It doesn't mean that I can't be open and engaging. I just have to understand what does that mean for me. So I prepare a little bit more when I go into a situation that I need to be a little bit more extroverted. And what does that mean? And there's some recovery time if we know about introverts and extroverts. So it's that idea of not so much about good, bad, right, wrong. How does that help inform where I want to go as a leader and as an individual?
Yeah, that's a great point, Doug. I appreciate that. It's funny, having spent some time with you in person, I would not see you as an introvert. So you definitely are able to flex.
Well, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that because it's something I've grown a lot as well. And having been a professor in the classroom at the graduate, undergraduate level, there's a lot of interaction there. But what I've learned about myself is I have no problem doing that, and I can engage in that way. But what I will also do is on my calendar is when I've got a situation where I'm doing that, I'm engaging, I'm in a class, or I'm leading a workshop, I'm always going to put some time after that to kind of come back, reflect, take some time down, and do that. It's just something I've learned about myself is I don't go back to back to back to back. I might go a meeting, have a great meeting, have a break. And it's just how I manage that about myself. And so, again, we're all learning. We're always learning about ourselves and developing. That's the great thing about leader development is you don't ever get there. You always get to kind of keep learning and keep growing and keep investing. It's a fun process.
That's great. Well, Doug, this has been really informative. I think we got time for about one more question. And one that I'm really interested in is this idea of, I don't know if I'm phrasing it the right way, but psychological safety, in the sense that how can you as a leader build an environment where it's okay to take risks, right? Because risk is where you're going to have innovation, you're going to have other things. And I think sometimes organizations struggle with that they want to have sort of a forward-facing, maybe risk orientation at some level, but then they don't want to make mistakes or fail or other kinds of things. And I think sometimes team members worry about that just generally because then they're like, well, which side of this am I on? What if it doesn't work out? You know, is this going to be a ding? So can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. And I look at it this way. To me, and what I've kind of come to grasp is psychological safety is a leadership issue. It is hard for individuals to feel like they have psychological safety if it's not championed, encouraged, developed by the leader, right? Because we look at the components, and I'll kind of flip it around this way. We look at the components of psychological safety, things like about being able to give and receive feedback, being able to professionally disagree, raise issues and concerns, ask for help, ask difficult questions, admit errors. So if those are the components and things that fall into this idea of psychological safety, then as a leader, I sit back and go, well, what am I doing to do that? What am I doing to create an environment where people feel like they can professionally disagree? Right. Well, you know, once the boss makes a decision, the boss makes a decision and we all head that direction. But up until that point, are we allowing people to bring in different points of view? Are we allowing them, are we taking that feedback on and going, okay, well, I hadn't thought about that before. And as a leader, just being genuine, authentic enough to sit there and go, hadn't thought about that. Let me think about that and let me think about that. So it's that idea of, you know, what am I as a leader doing, creating to do that? And a leader can do a lot of things, right? Getting role clarity, right? Letting people understand what is your role. You know, some groups, some leaders I've known that have appointed a devil's advocate in a group that said it's kind of some of these basic team roles in there of, you know, what am I not thinking about that I should be? What question have I not asked that I should be asking? And to have somebody on your team that does that, having support, right? Having good relationship with your leader, having a leader that you feel like you can bring up that issue and do that. Because we know psychological safety is important for, you know, right, engagement, improved performance, satisfaction, information sharing. So it's that idea of what, as a leader, what am I doing? If I see somebody that makes a mistake on the team, right? Well, chances are other people on the team know that person made a mistake. Well, how am I handling that? Am I sitting there going, okay, let's talk about that in an open environment going, what led to that mistake? How can we not make that mistake before or make that mistake again versus just punishing that person for making the mistake? Hey, let's hot wash it. Let's figure it out. Being a little open and say, hey, as the leader, hey, I made this mistake. Let's hot wash that. You know, creating that environment where we can do that because you're right, that the idea of psychological safety came about in, I think their early research was in operating rooms with surgeons, and were the support staff and were the nurses and were the other people able to question the surgeon, right? Everybody knew that the surgeon in the room was the ultimate authority in that room, but when a mistake happened, were you able to do that? Were you able to ask that question? And what we saw was, you know, from that research is mistakes went down, an environment went in, people felt empowered, people felt engaged, people felt like they were part of the process, not so much about who was the leader, but what is my role in contributing to the success of the team. So I think it's that idea of it starts at the top. It can't be a bottom up approach where, hey team, let's do this, and then the leader doesn't support it. It's gotta be a supportive environment It's got to be in your reward systems. It's got to be something that's talked about. It's got to be something that's encouraged, or it's not going to be, it's not going to just happen organically.
Terrific. That's great, Doug. Well, thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation. I think there's a lot to unpack here, and appreciate you making the time. For people who might want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
A couple of ways. I work a lot through LinkedIn. So Douglas Lindsay, LinkedIn there. I have my company, Leadership Solutions, that's connected there through LinkedIn as well. Or Leadership Solutions CO for Colorado at gmail.com is a good way to get a hold of me on email as well.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, thanks again, Doug. Really enjoyed the conversation. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul. Really appreciate it.